welcome to Cardicast, a glam podcast brought to you by New Cardigan. If you'd like to become a member of New Cardigan, head to our website at newcardigan.org, and if you're able to do so, please consider making a donation after you've joined. We run entirely on volunteers, so anything you can do helps us to keep the servers wearing and the Cardies partying. Our April Perth Cardi Party, hosted by Michelle Wiley, featured Eddie Marcus, the sharp mind behind the Dodgy Perth blog, on the shortest heritage pub trail ever. Eddie explored the architecture of three iconic Northbridge pubs and asks why, in an era of concrete and steel, did architects think it was a good idea to use Greek and Roman influences in their construction? The three pubs visited form part of the Heritage Perth Pub Trails app, available to download on Apple devices. And please note, there is a language warning. The following audio does include some swearing. Pub number one, the Brass Monkey.
Strait Islander people make to the life of this city and all of Western Australia, and offer my respect to their elders past, present and future. Just trying to find everyone. I'm going to introduce our Cardi Corps. We have Andrew and Brigitte, who's disappeared. She's around somewhere. We've lost her. Oh God, this is not a good start.
Still drinking.
That's all right. We'll find her eventually. And my name's Michelle. We have a few minor house rules, but people who've been before probably know it already. First one is be awesome. Be polite and friendly to everyone in the community. Our new Cardigan code of conduct applies at all times. It's on the website if anyone is bored enough to have a look at it. Number two, be nice or go home. The new Cardigan anti-harassment policy applies at all times and will be enforced. Basically, like my mum says, if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at all. Get permission. Don't record or photograph people without their prior permission. We'll do the same. That being said, we're recording. So if anyone doesn't want to be recorded for the podcast, come and let either Andrew or I know and we can edit you out later on. Know when to stop talking. We encourage self-awareness when participating in Cardi Party discussions, so we love everyone to have a chance to contribute. Look after yourself. Most of this party will take place in venues serving alcohol. If you're drinking, we encourage moderation and strongly discourage from you driving afterwards. Ensure you drink plenty of water and eat something vaguely resembling dinner. Chips will do, you know, something to fill the void. The last one is have fun. Cardi parties are fun and safe space. If you have any issues or spot any problems, come and talk to one of us or Brigitte when we find her. Yes, we are recording for the Cardicast. So all the new Cardigan parties are recorded for our podcast. They're available on our website. The latest one that's up is from the Melbourne crew, which is Anika Christensen doing a talk on art and feminism, which would be fun. Lastly, before I introduce Eddie, I just want to let everyone know that the pubs that we're going to tonight are part of the Heritage Perth Historic Pub Trail. It's available on the Heritage Perth app, which you can download on your Apple or Android devices. As per usual, I find it works better on Apple than Android, but whatever. All right, our guide for today, Eddie Marcus, is a freelance historian and heritage consultant for local government and state government and anyone else who asks him. When he's not busy writing formal heritage reports, he's the sharp mind behind the Dodgy Perth blog. If you haven't read it, go and read it. It's essential reading for any historian in Australia. It's amazing. Eddie was also the content developer for the Heritage Perth Historic Pub Trail. That's why he's the one that's guiding us around these pubs. So he'll take us to three pubs, we've already been in one, and examine their architecture and try and work out the motivations of the guys who designed them.
Thank you. Okay, first of all, I disagree with several of those things. Do not drink alcohol in moderation. It is really boring to do so. The whole point of alcohol is to drink it in excess and have a nice time. Also, if you only drink in moderation, you will never, ever get laid. This is my experience. Yours may be different. Also, my tour will not be transphobic, homophobic, sexist or racist, so I fulfill most of the new Cardi things, mainly because I'm talking about bricks, which really doesn't cover many of those. I'd like to look back at the pub we've just been in, and I'd like to look back at the way we came out, and I'd like to look at the two arches there. Some of you may not like this pub. It has had some controversy of a recent manager who has managed to alienate large sections of the community. But architecturally, this pub is really fascinating. But one of the things I want to say before the talk commences properly is I'm going to give you a very particular way of interpreting architectural history. And this is from a guy, and this is where I'm going to go slightly academic for 2 seconds, so tune out if you hate the academia. In the 1940s, a historian called Rudolf Witkover said that all architecture is an attempt to solve a problem. And the problems are usually dialectical. So you have, very simply, a capitalist who wants a pub and an architect who wants to produce a great piece of architecture. How do those two wrestle with each other and come up with what is the finished building? In many ways, architecture is much better than literature, in which the artist tends to predominate. Yes, there are editors, yes, there are publishers. But because of the expense of land and buildings, you usually find this is the purest form of reconciling sort of those dialectics. Okay, that's the intellectual part over. Those of you who don't care about academia can now tune back in again. And I want to explore through three different places sort of what these various problems were that the architect was wrestling with in order to come up with a solution. Now, this architect is Michael Kavanagh. He'd recently arrived from Adelaide, and this is basically his first commission. It's described in the Heritage Council literature as filigree. The Heritage Council believes you have scrolly little bits on your verandas, your Federation filigree. They don't actually care about any of the rest of the building. They've seen scrolly bits on the verandas, your Federation filigree. It's not. This is Romanesque. See the arches there? Now, I don't know how many of you know, but Romanesque is mostly associated in America with Henry Hobson Richardson. This is 1896. We're all talking about independence, sort of. It's a bit like independence, but we're talking about federation. We're talking about breaking. So we're wrestling with issues of what is home? What is our new home? Where are we going to look to for a new model of architecture if we're going to be not just British, but we're going to be something new? And the obvious place to look to, for an English-speaking culture anyway, is the Americas, who had made that break. They were still British, sort of, but they'd made that break and become an independent nation. The Americans here may be sneering in the background. I don't know. Sort of, so they looked to Henry Hobson, who was dominant throughout the 1880s and 1890s in American architecture. He's one of the few architects on Earth to have a whole architectural style named after him. We have the tower in the corner, which you'll see. It's not actually a real tower. It's an illusion of a tower because the brickwork implies a tower. Now, for those of you who don't believe me, please pass that round. That is an actual Richardsonian. Now, you'll notice the stonework rather than the brickwork here. The arches, you'll see the tower. You'll see that this is clearly influenced by, it's not a copy of any Richardson building, but it's influenced by this very American thing. So what are we wrestling with here? We're wrestling with three things. We're wrestling with what is home? Well, home for most people here was Britain. That included Ireland at the time. But we're going to become new. We're going to become Australian. We're wrestling with the capitalist. The capitalist who built this, who was a widow whose name escapes me, but it's in my notes and I've just passed the notes around, sort of, she didn't want to run the pub, she wanted to lease the pub, so she wanted to maximise revenue. But the architect wants to create a great building. So you're wrestling with capitalism versus art. You're also wrestling with a number of other issues, tradition versus modernity. So this, the verandas, by the way, you will not see in any American or British building. It's a response to the climate and comes from India. The word veranda comes from India, and it's a response because many, many people who came here had served in India in the military and things, and they knew how to make that response. So what you're dealing with here is a resolution of several things and this. So I would argue that this is Australian architecture. Because it's trying to wrestle with independence versus home. It's trying to wrestle with capitalism versus art. Capitalism being reduced here to a simplistic, you know, how can I maximise my revenue for the space? It's wrestling with all sorts of things and all the influences. And this is what you end up with this. And so I would argue that this is Australian architecture, because this is the solution to the problem of all of those, going back into academia, dialectics. We love that, because if we say dialectic, it makes us sound clever. Sort of, and that's what you've got. So what we're going to go on to next is a complete disaster of a building, and I will use the word clusterfuck several times. Anyone who's offended by bad language, please just bleep out. Sort of preference. We will now move round the corner, and I will show you where to go to get the best view of how bad George Temple Pool's building really is.
Pub number 2, Pika Bar.
It's a great book, by the way. I haven't read as much as the bookmark has got. Right, ladies and gentlemen, please gather round again a little, because I don't want to sound like a primary school teacher shouting at any of you. Okay, as you can tell from the label, this is actually Perth's first ever purpose-built major government school. There was, there's the old boys' school, which looks a bit like a church. It's on St. George's Terrace. That was a complete disaster. But this is designed by the legendary architect George Temple Pool. And I'm going to put my glasses on, A, to make me look cleverer, and B, so I can read the words I typed in tiny 11-point print. It's an utter clusterfuck. This is a dreadful, dreadful building. You cannot begin to describe how bad this building is without using words that I should not use, because it probably violates all of the Cardi Party sort of stuff. This kind of architecture demands ruthless symmetry. Have a look at that wing. Forget the little bit we're going to go into in a second, which is the bar. That's a later addition. It demands ruthless symmetry. It's the nature of this style of architecture. That wing looks nothing like that wing. Look at the windows. Look at the style of it. Look at that. That is set too far back. It doesn't work in any shape or form. In fact, nobody knows. All the research has been done through the archives, and the original things we've got, there are scribbles going, what the fuck happened here? Nobody actually knows how badly this building was. Now, I will again show this. Please pass that round. That is San Marco's Campanile in Venice. What you're looking at, and if you look at it, you can see, I'm not claiming that George Temple Pool took that particular, but a building like that as an example. This is squat and ugly. It should be tall, and if you're not doing tall, you should have vertical elements in it to try and, you know, make it to the eye look taller. And I'll show you in a second, once that's been passed round, an old shot of this to show you how exactly ugly this building is. Most people think this building is nice. In fact, George Temple Pool was quite proud of it. I have no idea why, because he was allegedly, he actually never had architectural qualification in his life. He was a trained draftee. So that may explain sort of some things. But what are we doing here? We're dealing actually with a very, very modern building. Those are concrete floors. There's a steel frame and structure. That brick is not doing any supporting loads. That brick is a skin on the outside of a very thoroughly modern building. Why did he do this? Well, the problem was, at the time, education and government had just taken over education, very controversial. So what you're looking at is people who was going, should government be taking over education at all? Is it government's role to do this? So what you need is to establish a fake history for education to be a thing at all. It was established. Plus, it was hugely controversial, the location. We're right in the heart of the city here. The city is associated with commerce, and it was at the time, and you can see the discussions in the rows at the time, it was not thought good for kids to be centered with commerce. Now, by commerce, often read the word prostitution. We're talking about kids because the prostitution center was, give or take, where the pub we were last at. That's where the prostitutes hung around there. So these kids were coming here. Is this the right place? It had no playground. There were no ovals for the kids to run around with. So what the government did was build a building that gives you a fake history, but on a government budget. So you've got a huge amount of tensions going on here. The other tension is, as I said, this is actually built on the most modern educational design possible. It's called the Central Hall Principle. This is a two-story central hall, which goes in there. It's not anymore because they've now broken it with a new floor. And the girls were upstairs on a internal veranda that came off those. The boys were downstairs in all the classrooms. This was the cutting edge. So we're talking about bleeding edge educational philosophy, trying to be, you know, 16th century Italian. And that all of those things are, again, in tension. You're looking at him, he's got a limited budget. He wants to do a great job. You're looking at this modern educational philosophy versus they're demanding that the building look, you know, ancient and reputable. You're looking at the tension of all of these things, and what you get is, because it's government, is a disaster. There is my libertarian philosophy betrayed completely. Sort of, it just doesn't work in any shape or form. And anyone who praises this building, die is too strong, but at least should sit in the naughty corner for at least 5 minutes. Is that an acceptable compromise? So you've got that. And again, this is an attempted solution. And I'm not suggesting that George Temple Paul completely screwed up, because I do not believe the architect he was. He would have mismatched those two wings. Something happened during the project. But it does not work. And the reason people like it, it's very straightforward. It's big. And people often confuse big things with nice things. We're now going to go in there. And anyone who really likes their beer, I really recommend the Brooklyn Brown Ale, which is a stunning American ale, but that's just on the side and has nothing whatsoever to do with this talk.
And pub number 3, The Court.
A little housekeeping. The toilets will be inside the pub. When crossing the road, please hold hands and do not lose your partner. There were some other things, I can't remember. Basic housekeeping, the things. Now, you might think you're looking at the most boring hotel in Western Australia. You're wrong. This is the most fascinating hotel in Western Australia. I'm not referring to the fact that for many of my friends, this was their home since 1992 when it became the gay pub, when the Lion on Aberdeen Street dropped its gayness, and this became the gay, if that is the right term. I am not subscribing by any of your politically correct principles. This is 1888. This is when it was built. It's called the Court Hotel, quite simply. That's the court there. That is the court that it was. So it's simply named. And pubs usually get a name which is important. The Great Western, which is now called the Brass Monkey, was quite simple. You called yourself the Great Western because you wanted to attract the train travellers. It's a big British, you know, line. It wasn't called the Great Western here, the line. But it was the idea that, oh, where do I get off? Where do I stay? I go for the place associated with the way. So this is the court. That's the court. Say you're a witness or a juror. Where are you going to stay? You're going to stay at the thing associated with the court there. That's straightforward. Now, this might look really simple to you, really boring. And there's a reason it looks slightly so boring. This is pre-gold boom. There is no money in WA. But this is still built by a capitalist who is building it and to then lease it, you know, to a publican. What I want you to focus on is at the very top, you will see three bands. It's actually painted black, white, black at the top. Three bands, followed by a white band, followed by some little toothy looking things. This is Ionic entablature. This is pure Greek architecture. The building is actually Victorian Queen Anne. This is a style which capitalists love because you could throw it up simply and cheaply and then lease it out, but claim that it had you know, some class because of that at the top. So we're looking at a very, very straightforward, you know, thing here. If they'd built it plain, wall to the top, people would have gone, that's a boring building. But by introducing that, now, for those who don't believe me or can't see it because of the light, please pass round, and I know this is Corinthian, for those of you who are architectural people, this was the best diagram I could find, this is Corinthian and not Ionic, but there are relations between Corinthian and Ionic. You will see the three things. You will see the classical Greek influence. Why? Well, here's your tension. It's thrown up by developer, John King Churchyard was the developer and builder. There's no architect involved here. He was a builder who built this. But you cannot then hope to lease it to, you know, a publican if you haven't got a bit of class. And how do you introduce class? Well, you introduce this. Inside, you will see a great picture. I've actually got a badder, that's a real word, picture. And you'll see that originally it had the balustrade. That's those little stone, you know, columns like a veranda all tightly packed together around the top. It did originally, so it had lots, a little bit more. You've only got this pediment left. There was originally a pediment. That's the sticking uppy bit for those who... I should not insult any of your intelligence. You know what a pediment is. Sort of, so it had more classical references. But this guy was literally trying to throw, this is 1888. There is no gold in this state. We are running on minimal budget. But he still needs to throw up a Greek reference at the top to go, this is a building that you want to drink at. This is a building you want to lease, more importantly, as, you know, the publican who's going to run the building. So what we're dealing with here is, what's the tension? Well, the tension is between tradition and modernity. It's very straightforward. And there is a guy who wrote in 1909, the idea, he said, I deny that there is no Australian architecture. He said, there is an Australian architecture. It's taking tradition, but tempering it with practicality. This is the ultimate building that you can see, that is taking tradition, a Greco-Roman, you know, classical influence of what makes a great building, and then tempering. Originally, of course, remember it had two verandas, just like the Brass Monkey. This 1950s veranda here is not what you'd originally had. But what he did is he did that to go, this is classy. And I'm going, this is just the result. This is the compromise he had to make. Because he wants to build the cheapest possible building, but he also needs a building that he can market and have people come to. And that very simple entablature, which is frieze, corniture and dentils, which are meant to represent in a Greek thing, imagine the cross beams, you know, of a Greek temple. They're meant to represent the beams going across. You're looking at a Greek temple here. Therefore, I would go, this is the greatest example of Australian architecture, because he did it as cheap as he could and tried to make it look reasonable. Just like a bloke who will turn, I don't know, a concrete mixer into a lamb roaster. This is pure Australian architecture. Takes the tradition, compromises it with the practical realities of the place we've got, and what you've got there is actually really pure Australian architecture. And that, ladies and gentlemen, concludes the most important theoretical part, unless anyone would like to be bored to death by how Witkowa would have understood all of these, which I imagine is none of you. Other than that, I reckon we go in, and the DJ out the back is going to be really good. Oh, okay, before we go in, are there any questions? Hopefully not, because my answer to all of those questions is, I don't know, I just made all of that stuff up.
Maybe you've already said this. When was that built?
1888.
Okay, thank you.
Making it one of the oldest pubs that's still going, continuous
and
pubs.
When did it open as a gay bar?
1992. It used to be the Union Bar. That there is where that's Trades Hall. That's where the unions met.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the then publican of this place from about 1905 was the first ever Labour MP.
Oh.
So this was where, until the 80s, the union, because they were...
It had
they kept asking for a license for Trades Hall to run a little bar there, and the licensing authorities kept refusing them, going, no, you've got the court, you don't need another license there. So this is where the union movement used to meet. Sort of until the 80s, from 92, it used to be on Aberdeen Street, what is now, I think it's called the Dean again. It briefly went through a phase of being called the Games Sports Bar, which was a dreadful name, but it's now the Dean again. That was the gay bar from about the 60s through to 92 when this place opened.
I like that you
think the renovations have been sympathetic?
No. The renovations are not important to this particular pub, because the internal design by the interior designers is what's dominated sort of this. So when you go in and you look at the wallpaper and you look at the lights, you'll find the interior designers, they don't care about the outside, because what they're concerned about now is capturing, you know, a particular mood inside. It's a very different aesthetic to the original designer who went the outside. When it was first built, it had a chaotic mix of bars inside that you couldn't find the entrance. And this was well noted at the time. It didn't make sense. It was either by an incompetent builder, or he was trying to replicate an organic evolution of an English bar and failing dismally.
Yeah.
Just failing dismally.
Yeah.
So he was trying to do one of the two. Either he was rubbish or he was rubbish. Sort of, you take your choice. It was only in the 30s where they cleared all the internal walls and just opened it up into a bigger space inside.
Anything else?
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go enjoy beer and DJs.
That was Eddie Marcus taking us on a meander through the heritage of three iconic Northbridge pubs at our April Perth Cardi Party. We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'd love you to review us on iTunes. It does help other people to find out about CardiCast and lets us know we're on the right track. Keep an ear out for more CardiCasts. Check out our website at newcardigan.org for more events. And remember, folks, JFDI.